Hello, everybody. Welcome to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby. It is Wednesday, October 5th, 2011, in the year of our Lord. Thanks for downloading the show. I really appreciate it. Coming up will be news with Esmeralda Leone. A talk about Nirvana's 20th anniversary issue of Nevermind. It's not like they are reissuing it. The record company reissue of Nevermind with those crazy expensive box sets. With Sean Gray, who's head of Fan Death Records. And then what happened at last night's open mic in Washington, D.C. with Adam Friedman and Michael Foody. Before that, I want to explain why I sound the way I sound. I am a little bit under the weather. I'm not really sick so much as stuffy. You know, I've had like an 8-day cold, but it was never actually that bad. I've been taking medicine for the duration of the pseudo-illness, and I just haven't been healthy. I've been on too many buses and airplanes and things of that nature to ever get okay, and there's been too many shows, but I'm not really complaining about it. I'm just saying I might sound a little stuffy, and I apologize to you, dear listener. One of the reasons why I'm not complaining about it, or at least I hope I'm not complaining about it, is something in my life, in all of our lives, made life that much better. It was amazing, and it's something that you just take for granted, because unless you have this thing, you're not going to remember it. It's just going to let it pass you by or whatever. That sounded so high school graduation. It's going to pass you by. Why would you say that at a high school graduate? Why are high school graduations so the worst thing in the world? Have you ever been excited to go to a high school graduation? Ooh, I wonder what the 18-year-old could impart with all of his knowledge. By the way, if you knew me at 18 and we talked about music and we weren't peers, like you were an older person or like a 10-year-old or something, I am so sorry. I am so, so sorry. And yes, we might have agreed on, we both like this Foo Fighters record or this, I don't know, Cupcakes single. But holy shit, I was so wrong about almost everything. And even if I was right, the way I said it would made it wrong, and I apologize. Anyways, guide dogs. Guide dogs exist, ladies and gentlemen. Don't kill yourself. Don't have a bad... There are guide dogs. Have you ever seen a guide dog? It is the most beautiful thing in the world. You could not have a bad day if you see a guide dog and realize, holy shit, the dog is helping us live. That's the best. We should all have guide... How do we have wars? Oh, man, I sound high. I'm not even high on cough syrup. Speaking of high on cough syrup, you can't take cough syrup through the screen area, which kind of makes sense, because if there's any like over-the-counter drug that could easily bring down a plane, it's cough syrup. That's not sarcasm. I actually think about it. It makes sense. Also, jokes that start off with, you're going to just cough syrup's meth. Do you have any idea how much meth, how much cough syrup and cough type of things it takes to make meth? Did you watch Breaking Bad? That's a fantastic show, by the way. Watch Breaking Bad. Back to the airport. You can't bring on cough syrup. You can't just douse the plane in cough syrup, though that would be a very sticky and fun plane. The Little Wayne Airlines is the first and last Little Wayne cough syrup reference on this podcast. I apologize. Yes, I have to stick through my guarantees. Anyways, I ended up taking about a half a bottle of Mucinex cough syrupy type stuff in New Orleans Airport on the way to Baltimore before we got on a bus to go back to D.C. to get on a train to go home. That stuff works. I'm not advocating drug use, but I'm just saying, if you're afraid of flying, I recommend taking a half a bottle of whatever Mucinex syrupy things you can find. I lost my headphones in Florida. This sounds like I'm a jet setter. Oh, no, it's not like that at all. And they sell M&M headphones in the airport. Not the artist M&M, E-M, but the candy, M&M. And I was so fucked up on cough syrup, I just started telling everyone that worked for any of the airlines, did you know they sell M&M headphones? And I realized that all my mother is just high on cough syrup for the last 28 years. That's how old I am. I'm 28, I just realized that. Anyways, let's get to more entertaining bits and pieces of the show. Really quick plugs for the next few days. This Friday, October 7th, at the Wonderland Ballroom, You, Me, Them, Everybody Live. It's going to be fantastic. I got Robin Hilton. No, Jesus, it's so sunny in my room. I have Robin Hilton and Bob Boylan from All Songs Considered. I have stand-up comedy. I'm Quebecian, ladies and gentlemen, from Catherine Jessup, who's very, very funny. If you haven't seen Catherine, she's a delight. Come on out. And music from Aaron Thompson. Aaron Thompson is a big, 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 big friend of the show, and I like Aaron a lot. And I figured, hey, hopefully these two nice gentlemen from All Songs Considered would like him as well. That's on Friday, Wonderland Ballroom, absolutely free. The following night, Saturday, October 8th, at the Artisphere, as part of their anniversary party, we're going to be doing two special editions of You, Me, Them, Everybody Live. One starts at 9:30, one starts at 10:30, and they are going to be fantastic. I don't know what that voice means. I've been doing that voice for like 2 years. I don't even like it. I apologize. Gray DC. Gray DC will be there. Someone from Gray DC will be there. Gray DC is this like awesome organization type thing. No, there's some organization that's a type thing. I apologize. Again, this is riddled with apologies. They'll be there. We're going to be talking. We're going to be doing our interviews with someone from Gray DC. You'll find out all about it at the actual event. That's going to be fun. We have stand-up comedy from someone I saw at the open mic a few weeks ago, Martin Plant. This guy is just so, so good, and I'm very, very excited for him to be there. And then music for the first hour from Silo Halo. Kind of shoegazery type stuff. I'll enjoy it. Hopefully you will too. The second hour, the 10:30 hour, we have author, journalist, Huffington Post man that writes words, Arthur Delaney. We have we're gonna do like a panel game, and Liddy DePillis, very, very great person, kind of the person that makes you happy to live in DC. She's a rare breed, and I am glad she's gonna be doing the show. She'll be there as well. We're gonna be playing a little DC game of sorts. We have a comedy from Brandon Wardell, who I've written multiple words about because he's a very, very funny man, and music from Get a Tan. So those are the next. That's this weekend. Holy shit! It's this weekend. I should be preparing. That's this weekend, Friday and Saturday. You should please come out to those. I kind of like that vocal thing. We're going to get to stuff soon. Don't worry. Today I wrote a piece for Brightest Young Things. It's about Zooey Deschanel. I have switched sides on the Zooey Deschanel Great Debate. I'm only 3 years too late on that, and I appreciate you for sticking with me all of these great years. It's called The Transcendence of Zooey Deschanel. You can find it on brightestyoungthings.com or on this here website. So that's it. Without further ado, here's Aaron Thompson, who will be playing on Friday, which is hopefully 2 days from when you're hearing this. Friday at the One Way Ballroom, Aaron Thompson, then Merle, then Sean, then Open Mic, then me again. Thanks for listening, everybody, and here's Aaron. Your day going?
I'm good. It's going okay.
Is it sunny over there? It's very sunny in Washington, D.C.
It is. It's sunny. I don't know the temperature because I haven't been outside, but it is sunny.
I think it's about 70. When I was outside, it was about 72. It's quite perfect.
Yeah, it's supposedly supposed to be nice here as well.
Merle and I are coming off of shows from the night before. I mean, after we come off of shows, we have to read news. But the news we read is not normal news. It's news that she finds interesting. So Esmeralda, what is the first?
Yeah, it's what I find interesting, which is...
Well, you get to pick the news stories. You are the news girl, the news lady, the news woman.
I know, but it's funny, the ones that I find interesting. Most people are like, oh, politics, this and that. I like the ones where you can break your wiener.
And speaking of breaking wiener, what is our first story?
That having an affair makes a man more likely to break his penis. And I didn't know you could break it.
Yeah, it's a thing you could break.
You could bend it or something, but not break it.
Yeah, well, how is this possible?
Oh, because most of the time when you have an affair, you're doing it in weird places.
Okay.
Like kitchen sinks, bathrooms, places where you're usually not supposed to be doing it. And
this
because
totally
of that,
makes sense.
You know, things can get all out of whack. And
This makes sense to me. Merle, would you be up for having an affair with a strange man in a place like a restroom at work or a airplane?
No.
Why not?
I don't understand that.
You don't understand what? Having an affair or having sex in weird places?
Having sex in weird places. Because you know that's not planned. They just did it.
And yeah, exactly. Why is that bad?
I need more work up than that.
You need it. You have to like have it in your Google Docs? In your Google calendar? And an alarm
it's just
goes
like,
off?
You know, you're on a plane. Hey, you want to do it? Okay. No,
well,
that's not.
I don't think it's ever. Hey, you want to do it? And someone goes, okay. No, it's not two almost apes. There's some thought behind it. There's a wooing process. Maybe you're on your third glass of champagne. You're in first class. And you want to enjoy your first class blanket and things get out of hand, literally. And then you decide to go to the laboratory to fuck. What's wrong with that?
Oh, and those are so tiny, too. And ugh.
There's got to be, like, I'm betting on Virgin Air. Like, the bathroom is that size. You know what I mean? Like, it's the size of,
those
like,
are big.
Not.
Those are fucking.
There's
got to
be an
size.
Airline that specializes in fucking.
Does Playboy? I feel like Playboy at one point had an airline.
Did they?
Or something sponsored them. And I'm sure those bathrooms were.
Like
I'm sure they just had beds. They weren't even bathrooms. The whole room, just there was a toilet in the side of
the shower.
You
sure the Playboy Club got canceled?
I heard that.
Yes, it did. Were you shocked at all?
It was not really. I watched it. I recorded everything, all the new shows, most of the new shows.
Oh, you did?
And I watched that one. Yeah, I watched it a few days ago, and I was like,
I couldn't get through the first...
I liked it more because it just was 60s.
Yeah.
And that was it. I could care less about the storyline.
I don't think there's a Playboy airline.
But I feel like they sponsored an airline at one point. Or they had, like, a plane. You know, just like a one-off thing. Where
oh, like a private jet?
Probably.
I'm sure that is the case, yes.
But anyway, they probably had a shower next to a round bed that spun.
What about a round bed? Would you?
They don't have seats. They just have beds. Bunch of beds in the...
Just a bunch of mattresses. Like, it's really run down, but it's a very nice plane. The inside looks like Detroit.
It's just instead of, you know, flooring, it's mattresses.
Yeah, it makes sense. That's a good idea
plastic
for the first hour,
mattresses.
But then after that, it just gets disgusting.
Oh, ugh.
What?
It really smells in there.
It's true. It's hard to just swap out giant mattresses if that's your floor.
Yeah, could you imagine getting hit by one on the ground? They throw them out like they do, like waste.
Ew. Do they throw them from the sky or do they wait till they're on the ground?
I don't know. But there was those things. There was like a bunch of stories of what I don't remember. It's been on and off. But there's stories where people, you know, shit comes from the sky, literally. Because it fell out of an airplane.
Well, Hugh Hefner had an airplane from 1969 to the mid 70s.
See, I bet that one had a round bed.
So it was sold to Venezuela Airlines and reborn as a YV-19C.
Great.
Yeah, so like
those
you could
YVs 19C.
It was called the Big Bunny.
Makes sense.
And a plane has never before looked more like a dick. If you are staring at the same thing I am. Anyways, next story. Moving on, because this could get into a vicious cycle. Of dick jokes.
Well, all of these, I like that most of them are sex-related, and then there's the nice ones.
Okay.
Or not the nice one, but the non-sex one completely.
What's the next story?
Ladies think about food more than they do sex, which I think it's true on my part.
I don't think anyone thinks about sex more than food.
I think there is.
I don't think so. It's because
it's gotta be people.
Maybe I'm assuming that when you're eating, you're thinking about what you're eating. And that's not fair.
Well, when I eat, I watch food shows. So.
Do you really? I think that's probably very common.
I do. Because they're very, you know, they're not going to upset my stomach as
that's
I'm eating.
That's fair.
Because it's
I like
about
to,
food.
You don't like to watch crime dramas?
I do. But I've made the mistake of watching things like Midnight Meat Train while eating. And it wasn't the best idea.
Well, meat was in the title.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of stuff. And I'm just I'm not saying I have a soft stomach or anything, but that was gross.
I understand.
Or, you know, surgery things. I don't mind eating.
Do you feel, are you shocked by the results of this study?
No, because I think it's true.
I'm trying to think of anybody
that
thinks
about... I think more about food than I do sex.
You kind of have to think about food.
Yeah, but I think about it a lot. Okay. Like, all the time.
You sound like it's a problem. It sounds like an awful thing when you think about food.
I'm just always, there's just chicken legs swimming in my head.
That is a nightmare.
Everyone looks like a meatloaf, you know.
See, this is, now I'm reading the from the Press Association, the UK Press Association. It's a little skewed. It says the study carried out by a weight loss company, Atkins, also found that 1 in 10 women would feel guilty or strained from their diet than being unfaithful to their partner. So this is more about dieting than sex. So more...
I think it's funny that you would feel worse about cheating on your diet than you would about your loved one.
Well, you're assuming that they're a loved one, and you're assuming relationships have love.
Oh.
Well, I mean, in that scenario, you are.
That's my sunny outlook.
That's good. Well, that's kind of a nice outlook. I like love and food.
There's a school in Britain, again, they're very progressive there.
We're Anglophiles.
There's a school in Britain that banned kids from raising their hand during class. They just do a thumbs up.
They do a thumbs up?
Yes!
I understand this, actually.
I don't understand the thumbs up.
Okay.
This is like auctions now. Now you're just like doing little twitches and things to get attention, you know. I know the answer. Wink, wink.
Think about when you were in grade school. Who spoke...
Oh, I get it. I know. People raise their hand and they freak out.
No.
Then you think those kids are idiots.
No, not that. I'm just saying that I think more men than... or more males than females raise their hand in class.
See, I wasn't even thinking about gender. I was thinking more of that kid that does flail their hand wildly.
Well, there's that, too. That's another good reason to do the thumbs up. I think this is actually a very good idea.
I don't know. I think it's a little weird.
Why is it weird? Because it's just like a
thumbs up.
So? Yeah, what's
it's
wrong
It's quieter.
With
I love
It's in the story. It says they're getting calmer and quieter classes.
I think it's almost teaching. It's almost showing kids they don't. I mean, the shy kids, I get it. They don't, you know, it's a little less than having to raise your hand and be center of attention.
Exactly.
But I feel like raising your hand is very, like, me.
Exactly.
I know what's going on.
Exactly.
And a thumbs up just kind of is like, yeah, hey.
No, great. Well, it makes, maybe you'll think more about what you're going to say rather than before shooting up your hand.
Going to shoot a thumb up in the
exactly air. It's not nearly as dominant. There's not a reason to get excited about that, so you're only going to participate if you have something to add to the conversation.
Well, they're nerds anyway if they're excited about
we're talking about like fourth graders in Britain. Biggest nerds.
Yeah, they're
in the
nerds
world. All these nerds.
They're already nerds.
I like the nerds. They're
the British thing from them. They're nerds.
I'm looking at this school.
I just imagine all Brits are like
smart.
Harry Potter.
Yeah.
They're like Harry Potter, or they're like all those Agatha Christie movies.
I don't think I've seen an Agatha Christie movie.
Or not Agatha Christie. Who's that other lady?
Oh.
Pride and Prejudice. And...
Oh, Emma Thompson. Yeah, Jesus Christ, I sound fucking...
Emma Thompson, yes. Emma Thompson.
Yeah, everyone's favorite. Emma Thompson.
This shows how dumb we are. Yeah. That lady who wrote those books, Emma Thompson.
Oh my God, this is depressing. Emma Thompson.
The lady who wrote Pride and Prejudice and Emma. And...
Oh God.
They're all so proper. I'm thinking like British kids are like that and nerds. Isn't that a horrible... We're going to get emails.
Yeah, me might.
Your co-host is racist.
Me or you?
Me.
All right, well just send them to Emma Thompson at Britain.com. God, I can't... Why couldn't we think of Jane Austen? It's like the most basic name. Maybe that's why I'm thinking of Emma Thompson.
You said Emma Thompson.
I did.
I said Agatha Christie, which isn't even... I think those are crime novels, and she's not even British.
Was Emma Thompson ever in Jane Austen? Oh, yeah, she was in Sense and Sensibility?
Yeah, she was. Her and
Wait. She's credited as a writer for Sense and Sensibility.
So she rewrote it?
She wrote the screenplay.
Jane Austen wrote it.
Yeah, but she adapted the screenplay, so technically I was right.
Oh, whatever.
And Ang Lee directed it. I didn't know that. Anyways.
You were technically right, but that's not what you were thinking.
No, it's not what I was thinking at all. And I called myself dumb.
You're just thinking, you've seen she's very British, and she's probably in those movies.
She's got thin lips.
Yeah. Her and Colin Firth.
They're
the only people in those movies.
Colin Firth starred in the television version of Pride and Prejudice.
It's still Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, and Emma. Jesus. Gwyneth Paltrow, even though she's not British, but she plays a good British.
She does play a good Brit. There's not enough British actresses.
Yeah, not enough. Gotta bring in outside help. Okay. Gotta outsource it.
Alright, what's the next story?
So, another study. It found that makeup makes people think that you're more trustworthy and competent.
Really?
Although I'm assuming it has to be... Okay, see, so what they had to do... is they did natural. They photographed women in three makeup styles, natural, professional, and glamorous.
Uh-huh.
They didn't throw in slutty.
Wouldn't that be glamorous?
No. You can be makeup glamorous and not look like a slut.
What constitutes looking like a slut?
You know, when you have eyeshadow that doesn't even match your face.
Because I know all the fellas and I, when we're out perusing for sluts... we definitely look at eyeshadow to figure out who's a slut.
Well, now think about it. Think when you think of like what's the stereotypical slut is always like that bright blue eyeshadow and they're wearing red lipstick and huge eyeliner and.
That's like the really bad stereotype for a Reno, Nevada prostitute.
Yeah.
That's not a
slut.
They did
throw one of those in there.
No, when you say
you just called her. I like you said it's a stereotype for the
Nevada prostitute. Yeah, and I'm saying that when we say the word slut, it's a giant umbrella term that means to any promiscuous person. Am I right or wrong? I'm asking.
But a lot of sluts wear a lot of makeup.
And a lot of sluts wear Chuck Taylors, but that's not a definite sign that you're a slut.
All right, then prostitutes.
Fine, we'll go with prostitutes.
We'll
But this is only like a very small subset of prostitutes. See, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get rid of racism and social profiling by redefining the word slut. And just this is my we
and
are the
world.
I'm
keeping it going.
Makeup.
That's why we're the odd couple. You're trying to break it, and I'm trying to re-bring it back.
You're going to make this stronger. Let's keep people down, makeup people. So
but
what's
I'm
the
saying
study
there's,
say?
But, okay, there's a lot of women who do wear makeup that look like prostitutes, and they're not.
Yes. I'd say 99%.
And they didn't use it. They didn't throw that in there because I think that would skew their results.
I don't know. Where was this study done?
Because those girls look horrible and no one trusts them because they think they're prostitutes. But they're not.
Well,
they have no sense of makeup.
So you're saying that it's better for it's better to have makeup on than not makeup on.
I guess the natural.
I'm looking at it. And
I'm just looking at their results. Makes sense if the makeup looks good.
I don't think it's necessary. I always prefer when Kelsey does not wear makeup.
Yeah, but sometimes I bet you don't even know when people are wearing makeup.
That is true. I only know who I see every day. So you're right about that.
They do the natural look.
And obviously it's different if you're wearing stage makeup or you know you're going to be under bright lights. So maybe I agree with you.
Well, I don't think they're throwing those into consideration.
That's all I can
say. I find the stage people very, very trustworthy.
No, they will gossip.
But I'm just saying they didn't throw in the people who don't know how to use makeup and they wear it anyway.
Yeah, that's the problem with this study. They had somebody
else. Most of the time, I don't trust those people.
Yeah, you're kind of right. There's really no way to do a study like this.
That is true.
To get a clean result.
Yeah, because all of these are probably very well done makeup.
Yeah, so no matter what, if it's well done, it's well done. So people that are more put together are more trustworthy.
Yeah, that's pretty much what they're saying.
Yeah, I
natural agree. Usually think people don't wear makeup and then they look a little... everybody has something on their face.
Well, I guess the male equivalent is shaving.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Like, there's a lot... you can do a lot with mascara.
That is true.
It's very amazing what mascara will do to your face.
I've only worn it a handful of times, but I've always enjoyed it.
Really?
Yeah.
Does it bring out your eyes?
Yeah, it really does. It's awesome. It's great. I've only
Why
worn them.
Why have you been wearing mascara?
Their shows. When I was in the band, we would wear whenever we'd play in drag, I'd wear mascara.
Would you do it right though?
Oh yeah. Usually, I think I've only done it to myself once, and then it was fixed up later that night because I didn't know what I was doing.
They're like, "Come here." No.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what
it's
happened.
All clumpy. You got it all uneven. You put eyeliner on.
Yeah.
See, now that would be untrustworthy.
There you go. All
right. Because if you can't put on fucking eyeliner right, come on.
All right.
Why would I trust you with children or money or I don't know. What else do you trust people with?
Children and money. That's it.
That's all you can.
Yeah. Children and money. Not food. Not safety. Not driving. No, just money and food. No, what is it?
Yep.
Money and kids? Money and kids. That's it. Final story.
But for me, it would be, you know, take out kids and do put in food.
All right.
That's did disgusting. You know that oral sex is linked to throat cancer?
I did not.
I didn't know that either.
I did not.
The Times reported that.
That's
so
interesting.
Continue. So it's a new study that throat cancer patients from 84 to 2004, they tested tumors for HPV.
Okay.
And they found that 16% of the patients in from the 80s and 72 of those diagnosed after 2000.
Wow.
So they found HPV, which is that
human papilloma.
It's contracted.
Yeah.
What this article is telling us that it's a good argument to give boys the HPV vaccine. Mine is a good excuse not to give blowjobs. But
yeah, I guess you're right. They're both good. I mean, not good, but
like,
they're both.
I don't want throat cancer.
They're both reasonable, I guess. I don't know. Well, it's like TLC said: don't go chasing waterfalls. Go burn down an Atlanta Falcons wide receiver's house
with his shoes.
With his shoe fire. How is that not on the news every night? This happened.
Because she's dead.
I know, but that's why it's in memoriam. Anyways.
We must always remember.
Never forget.
That was
the
a
night.
Long time ago.
15 years ago? 20 years ago? Either way. Was it the one with the condom? Was it left eye? Condom under left
eye?
Yes,
it was left eye. They all were
left eye. Burning down houses. That's a good way to end it. Merle and I will be in New York City for CMJ. We're doing a fuckload of shows. Merle will be at the Hungry Brain on Monday, October 10th for Dream Bait Presents and Homeroom on the following Tuesday the 11th. Merle, you got any final words?
No.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for listening. And here's a song from Aaron Thompson.
Touch as a hand I felt too much. For your kind of touch is a hand that can't feel. For your kind of truth as a mouth that lies for you. For your kind of truth is a mouth that lies. Caught a glimpse of your heart, and it weeps in the dark, in the den of the wolves.
Okay, so Sean, you just bought the Nevermind 20th anniversary vinyl and CD sets, is that correct?
Correct, yep.
Why did you do that?
You know, it's funny, I guess it's not so much nostalgic as I think now I understand the record a lot more. I think when it first came out, I was lucky enough to, I guess, be old enough to kind of understand it. And
you were what, 9 years old when it came out?
Yeah, I was nine. And I mean, I think it, you know, I don't play sports.
Yeah.
I really couldn't. So I mean, all I did was listen to music. So I kind of had a good sense of just listening to music. And you know, I didn't grow up in like.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Ellicott City, but it's not really a city. You know, it's just a kind of a suburb.
Suburb of what?
Of Baltimore.
Okay, how far outside of Baltimore is it?
It's like 20, 30 minutes.
Okay, and in a very well-written essay that you wrote, that's been published twice now. You mentioned that it's kind of like a middle to lower middle class town.
Well, the part of Ellicott City I was in.
Okay.
Ellicott City in general is actually pretty middle class, or very almost upper middle class in a sense.
Okay.
Because it's Howard County, and that, I don't know if you've ever been there. But
I
Howard
don't
County,
think I have.
Yeah, Howard County is a pretty pretty wealthy county.
Okay.
You've got Columbia in there, and so it's a lot of you have a lot of people that commute to D.C., for example, that live in Ellicott City.
Okay.
But they consider it a suburb of Baltimore just because it's closer.
So you are 9 years old. You're living in this suburb that's kind of well-to-do, but you're not in the well-to-do part. And you hear Nevermind because of your father's coworkers made a tape for you. Is that correct?
Yeah, I actually had heard Nevermind on MTV.
So you were watching MTV at 9 years old.
Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't play sports. You know, I didn't go outside a lot.
Yeah.
So
well, do you
want to
tell people really quickly why you don't play sports?
Oh, I have mild cerebral palsy.
Okay, so that's it's not like
I use a walker to walk. So that, you know, I wasn't physically able to, you know, I mean, I went outside, but it wasn't, you know, I wasn't able to do a lot of physical activity.
Well, another reason I wanted to mention that really quick is because you actually are a big football fan.
Yeah, I am. I actually am a big sports fan in general. I mean,
yeah.
It's kind of funny. I don't know if I live vicariously or something, or I just enjoy sports. I mean, I don't really view, you know, not to get into the disability too much, I don't really view it as a disability so much as it's there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think when you're socialized a certain way, you kind of, you can either make it worse or better, or just forget about it, or kind of deal with it. You know.
Well, I bring this up because Nirvana, even in that second record, Nevermind, obviously, they were really against jocks.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were a sports fan
at nine years old,
and like, did you worry about these two things? Did it matter? Because you didn't have the CD, you didn't have the tape, you had a copy of a tape.
Yeah, I had a copy of a tape. Well, what's interesting is I remember when In Bloom came out. I think It Smells Like Teen Spirit, you didn't really understand the lyrics. You just kind of were like, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah.
But I think when In Bloom came out, and I recorded that video on VHS, and I would watch it over and over again. And you listen to the lyrics of that, and you can definitely – even at that age, I was kind of like – because he was talking about jocks.
Yeah.
Then. But I, you know, I never fit into jocks anyways. I mean, again, like, even though I like sports, I never knew that culture either, you know. I couldn't play sports. I didn't know that people were assholes, I guess.
Okay. You know, that's actually a very I think that's why you're still such a big sports fan.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I don't know what that's like to be that competitive in terms of being an athlete or something like that, or being part of that, you know? So I just, to me, the competitiveness of just the sport itself is cool, but I don't get the other existential parts about it, you know? It just doesn't resonate with me just because I've never experienced it before, you know? When you play, like, Little League baseball or football or whatever, you know, you have that whole culture surrounding you of being competitive and being the number one. You know what I mean? I never did. So maybe that's why that I can kind of fluctuate between those two things, you know, and it not really affect me in the same way, or I don't really question, you know, one or the other.
Let's go back to Nevermind really quick. You wrote this piece for some blogs. Could you tell us the title of the piece and the blogs where people can find it?
It's called About a Kid, Why Nirvana is Still Punk to Me. I did the original version for Aerovision, and Mishka, who I write for now, who is a clothing company in New York City. And I guess they must do – I don't really know too much about them, but they wanted to do some work with Fandeath Records. And
that's the record label that you co-run.
Correct. And so we were going to do a showcase with them, with a couple of bands. That hurricane that happened at the end of August kind of prevented that from happening. But they really like what we do. And I've been trying to write more recently just because I'm getting ready to go to grad school. I'd like to think I'm getting ready to go to grad school, I should say. And then so I just wanted to write more. And so I asked them, like, I know you have a blog, if there's anything I could do to help. And they said, well, you can write whatever you want, and just basically gave me free rein to, like, do whatever I wanted.
And this was the first piece that was on there, and I'm a very
they kind of wanted this piece. I think when they read that piece, they knew that I could write.
Okay.
You know, I guess, I don't know, they just enjoyed that, and I think it was, they just they knew that the 20th anniversary thing was coming along, and you know, I think it was something that they just wanted to put up there. So, I mean, you know, I was honored that that was the first piece there.
And in the piece, you mentioned that you started off a very big Nirvana fan, and then you realized you liked Nirvana, but you actually liked the bands that inspired Nirvana, maybe even more. You're actually a bigger Sonic Youth fan than a Nirvana fan.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, and you and I are kind of the same age, so we can both kind of remember this situation with Nirvana, where when they were together, you know, it wasn't cool to like Nirvana in high school, really. At least not in my middle school.
Well, in my middle school, there was no music. I went to a Catholic school, so there was no talk about music.
Yeah, so that's even, yeah. But I went to public school, and Nirvana wasn't, it wasn't that they weren't cool. It's just I don't think kids, you know, in middle school understood. Yeah. I think when I got into high school, I think people understood more. But I was like in sixth or seventh grade, you know, and that was when In Utero came out, and people just didn't understand that record. And I love that record. I would argue, I think In Utero is a better record than Nevermind.
In Utero is my favorite record of all time, but I understand why Nevermind is a better record in terms of everything else.
Yeah, I do too. And I think that's what's why I'm so interested in having the box set or having the vinyl.
Yes.
I think there's something to be said about when you care about art or specifically music, and you can really dive into what created the record and how it kind of formed itself.
Do you have the Nevermind DVD that came out about, I don't know, 5 years ago, the classic album one?
Yeah, I bought that. Yeah, it's good. It's good,
but after getting that, I kind of was like, okay, I'm done. I think I know everything. I've heard all the stories. There's absolutely nothing I could actually learn from this recording anymore. Do you think I'm wrong? Do you think that this box set, the CD and the vinyl, has anything that I could possibly gain from buying? I don't understand why you would need to buy it.
Yeah, I yes and no. I think ultimately at the end of the day, what makes Nirvana interesting to me isn't how good they were, but it's how they positioned themselves and where they came from.
Okay.
You know, when you listen to the boombox versions of these songs, I mean, yeah, they're recorded on a boombox and it's going to sound raw, but I mean, it almost sounds like a hardcore record. Like, it's really, really bizarre to hear these songs kind of fluctuate from being these really abrasive, and they're still abrasive, but almost like a lo-fi, like, punk record. And you could argue, you know, Nevermind is the biggest mainstream punk record in existence.
Well,
but these boombox versions are just raw. It's kind of like there's a lot of, I don't know if you are into blues or anything like that, but a lot of people that are into like really like Mississippi Delta blues, one of the things they love about that stuff, like Lead Belly or Charlie Patton, is it's just raw. And it's not necessarily has to do with the recording quality at the time. I mean, partly it does, but it's just how kind of naked these songs were.
Okay, and I see your point, but I think you're romanticizing something that was never there. One was because there was a guy named Alan Lomax walking around with a microphone, and that's all you had. And one was some guy that woke up in the middle of the night or had not a lot of money, and it's 1989, 1988, 1990, and that's the top of the technology. Where nowadays, when people are doing it, it's just a cheap cop. If you can make anything sound better, you probably should.
No, I actually think you're not understanding here, because the reality of Nirvana, especially if you look at earlier interviews or things like that, they're talking about like harsh noise music. I mean, they were talking about like the Butthole Surfers, and I'm not talking about like Pepper Butthole Surfers.
No, I understand. You're talking about 80s Butthole Surfers.
You know, Kurt Cobain has name dropped Merzbow before, so it isn't one of those.
He's also name dropped Cheap Trick.
Yeah, of course, so. And again, if you want to segue into that, that's the beauty of Nirvana.
Of course.
That's kind of what – that's why I think this box set is important. You know, I think you ultimately have kind of hit the nail on the head there, because in reality, I can't think of too many bands that can name drop bands like Flipper or the Boredoms or Merzbow or Celtic Frost and nonchalantly talk about Cheap Trick or the Beatles.
Yeah.
Or Raspberries or something like that. Well, and I think, am I romanticizing it? Whenever you buy anything that's nostalgic, there's always a romanticized realm there. But I think what's interesting is you have very few bands nowadays that can kind of have this timeline and nonchalantly be able to name drop those bands and have a soapbox that will sell bajillions of records. And I know the retort to that would be, of course, we live in a different age now where records don't really sell, but that's still an amazing thing that a band that has sold 15, 20 million copies of a record was able to name drop Merzbow and Cheap Trick at the same time. That's crazy.
It is crazy, but it's kind of nice, and it really, for the first time, it seems like, oh, this is getting really VH1-y, like, 10 years ago, and I apologize to the listener. It feels like we finally have our Beatles, you know?
Yeah, no, it does. I remember when Kurt Cobain died, and I don't know where you were, but I got home from school. It was like...
I saw the news broke on hard copy.
I think I was watching maybe the nightly news, or not even the nightly news. I think it was something... It was some, like, afternoon news. And then as soon as I heard that he had died, I had switched over to MTV.
Yeah.
And again, we didn't have the internet then. So MTV, if you weren't living in, like, New York City or some really, like, you know, city place, you were in the suburbs, that's all you had. You didn't, you know. So you turned on MTV, and I remember, and I forget his name. He's one of the main writers for Rolling Stone. He's pretty respected. I think
Kurt Loder?
No, not Kurt Loder. This other guy.
He was the guy that broke the news and was on air the entire time.
Yeah, I mean, Kurt Loder was there, but there's this guy they brought in from Rolling Stone. I forget his name.
He's got a weird name, but it's Jan Werner.
It's something like Robert something or other. I could look it up, but the point is, this guy was on, and he had said, you know, like he compared Kurt Cobain to John Lennon, not in the sense of him maybe writing songs as solid as John Lennon or anything like that, but just the aesthetic of them both and kind of their backgrounds.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, not as cheesy as it sounds, not playing by the rules. And that kind of, you know, I remember being like when he died, and I remember not liking the Beatles because that was your dad's music. You know what I mean? Yeah. There were certain things that, it's not that I hated the Beatles or thought they were bad. I just didn't care about the Beatles. And so it was one of those things that even in Kurt Cobain's death, I remember hearing that and being like, well, maybe I should listen to like some John Lennon music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was one of those things where, you know, I couldn't really see the connection until something like that had happened. But I mean, to kind of get to your original point, like, yeah, I think we romanticize Nirvana in that sense that, you know, there's this grandiose kind of narrative to them. But you know, you're right. I think it's the closest thing that we've gotten to a band that is, I won't look back on it and feel cheesy or feel cheated. You know what I mean? Like, this is a band that, you know, is, again, as kind of journalistic as it sounds, they're timeless.
They are.
But yeah, I think we kind of have found our Beatles in that sense. What's interesting, if you listen to the stuff from the Fecal Matters demos to Bleach to, you know, some of the EPs and then, you know, Nevermind. And what makes this box set important is you see the progression there. And that, if there is a comparison with the Beatles, it's definitely that. I mean,
you don't think we saw that? You don't think we saw that in the box set that came out 5 years ago?
You do, but I think the problem that I have with the box set was I think that it was kind of a rush job. And
really?
I don't think that they really put in the care that they should have for that. And the reason being is if you kind of read up the history of the box set, there was a lot of like red tape in that, and it was a lot of arguing. That box set should have been out years ago, before it came out. You know, like, I mean, probably it came out, what, 2004? Probably should have came out in like 99 or 2000. And the interesting thing is, you know, Unplugged and Muddy Banks of the Wish Cop.
It's supposed to be a double album. I know that. Yeah.
So it was one of those things. There's a lot of things with Nirvana that we aren't really getting just in terms of how it should be presented, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The box set was great for historical purposes, but I don't think it did a good job of describing Nirvana's narrative.
I'm not looking for the narrative. I think I've read enough and seen enough that I know the narrative pretty much inside and out.
Here's the thing. Here's where I would disagree with you. I am, because to me, it's still interesting to find out little things about Nirvana every day. And if you read that blog post, I talk about like you know, the day before I wrote that, I read that Nirvana did an industrial show where they borrowed a drum machine from the owner at the time of Kill Rock Stars. Mm-hmm. And they did like almost like a Big Black kind of show. Yeah. And I, you know, it was like a noise show, and I never knew that they did anything like that.
I didn't know that either. But you,
I mean,
I'm more interested in hearing the stuff than in hearing recorded anything than reading about something. You know what I mean?
Well, no, I'm not talking about reading about something. I think the way that the box set should have been constructed, I think they should have been more. I think they should have been pickier. And the rumor is that there is actually better demos, Kurt Cobain's home demos. But Courtney Love, who's I think has said this in public, is waiting for the right time to release those. I mean, she's sitting on, I don't want to say goldmine, because I don't think like it would sell as well as she thinks. But she's sitting on some cassettes and stuff that I think are important, especially post Nevermind. I mean, I think that's the most important stuff. I don't necessarily think the pre-Nevermind stuff is as important as the post-Nevermind stuff. Because I think In Utero, I think for me, In Utero was a way more important record. I think it was a way more important record, and I think it was executed much more interesting than Nevermind was. That being said, that's not a diss on Nevermind.
Well, you just spent about $400 not dissing Nevermind.
Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing. I go back and forth on In Utero and Nevermind, just in terms of do I really enjoy Nevermind, or do I think that In Utero just completely, you know, trumps it?
They're just different. There's no better than the worse.
And I think that's what the box set ultimately proves. You know, because you get this, you know, if you kind of listen to Nevermind just as a single disc, it's a pop record. It's a slick pop punk record. And the nice thing about this box set is it kind of reminds you that this was a punk band. This is a band that fucking listened to Flipper.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really awesome that a band like that, where they're selling 20 million records, you know that when Flipper is in town, they still went to go see them. To me, that's such a crazy thing.
So we're outside of Solly's open mic. I'm currently hosting it with Eric Zeger, and these two gentlemen have gone up. I'm speaking with
Adam Friedland
and
Michael Foodie.
Foodie just went up. Friedland went up about an hour ago. And Adam told me to refer to him as a funny man, so I will keep that in mind.
Adam Friedland.
So my favorite funny man in D.C. and my favorite stand-up are together. And you wanted to talk about the Occupy Wall Street thing, Adam.
You just started it like a second after I said that. I didn't even prep. I didn't even know we were going to do this.
Speaking of Occupy Wall Street, what are your thoughts on that, Michael Foodie?
I don't know. Wall Street, they've been in fat cats for too long. But I want to know when we're going to occupy Main Street, when we're going to stop occupying Wall Street and start occupying Main Street.
Would you run for political office?
Maybe, like, dog catcher, not, like, anything real.
Could you run for dog catcher?
Some places they let you do anything.
That's fair. Adam, would you run for office? Didn't you want to go into politics?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I thought I could be the president. But now I realize that when you die, everything becomes black. And that there's no point to life. So now I don't want to be a politician.
Who's the comic that went up about 2 ago? She did, 3 minutes on God, but it was actually funny. She's like,
believes in God.
I didn't see
Tasha. She was good. What'd you think of Tasha?
I think she's good.
I agree. Okay, moving on. Why do you come to this open mic? Why do you come to any open mics? Because you did about, you both did 5 minutes. Adam, you did completely new material. Foodie, you did about, I don't know, 3 minutes of completely new material. Why do anything old in an open mic?
Because I don't come up with a full 5 minutes of material that I like every week.
Do you ever write on the spot?
Sometimes. That gay guy thing was new.
That gay guy thing is very funny. Do you want to do it for the listener at home, or do you just want to tease it?
I'll do it.
Do it.
I do this impression that I'm working on. It's called Gay Guy, and the way it works is I'm like, oh, I can't believe I ate that whole dick. I'm gonna get so fat. That's basically it.
That is very, very funny. Adam, what did you think of that bit?
I think it's good. I think it's edgy. I think it's very...
Shut up. Okay, why did I ask you a question then to shut up? That's very rude,
honestly,
I apologize.
Modern Family makes everyone think that being gay is normal, and we all know that.
Oh, really?
You're not born that way.
Fair enough, Adam Friedland. Adam, you used to do Entourage in 5 minutes or under a minute or something like that.
Yeah.
Now that the show is off the air, are you worried that you're going to run out of material?
Yeah, well, what I'm worried about is just dying. All the time. I just wake up and I'm afraid of dying, and I go to sleep and all I think about is dying. And then, so, I mean, Entourage being over has really fucked me up.
I don't know what to say to that at all. How was your Budweiser?
Listen, it's an American classic. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
How was your Schlitz, Michael Foodie?
I drank it.
Fair enough. Why do you wear a suit coat? I think it looks good on you.
Oh, thank you. It looks good on most men. That's why I wear it, mostly.
Is there anybody that I should know about in the DC comedy scene that does not do open mics anymore?
No.
Okay, fair enough. Adam?
Lucifer Lamp.
Okay. How are you able to get your friends to come to this thing? Every time you do a set, it's completely new. Why would anyone show up to an open mic? I don't get it.
Because I hang out with losers that don't have much going for them. So when I say I'm going to an open mic, they're like, all right, we're losers. I mean, we don't really have much going for us. We might as well go to this open mic.
Will your friends listen to this?
Hopefully, yes.
All right, good.
This is an intervention, guys. I'm here for you.
Is this the first intervention via podcast?
Have you listened to What the Heck?
No, it's What the Heck.
With Mark Maron.
Okay, we're good. I don't know what to talk about with him anymore. He's insane. But I like him so much. What can I do to make this open mic better, Michael?
I don't know. You got all the key ingredients in place.
What are the key ingredients for a good open mic?
The key ingredients are, one, you have a place for the stage.
That is true.
Two, you have seating.
We do. We have seating and stage.
Three, they turn off all the televisions that you can see if you're actually watching the open mic, but they just have one for the gagglers in the back.
Gagglers. Adam, what can I do to make this better?
You need to make it a lot more sassy.
Really?
Just general sassiness.
General sassiness. Okay, any parting words for the listener at home? This will go up tomorrow.
I just want you guys to know that when you die, everything turns to black. Existence ends.
Michael?
I agree with that, but all your dreams will come true if you follow your heart.
All right, that is the show. Thank you so much for listening. I want to thank Esmeralda. I want to thank Sean. I want to thank Adam, and I want to thank Michael. Aaron Thompson will be playing You, Me, Them, Everybody live Friday. Friday evening at the Wonderland Ballroom. Other guests include Bob Boylan and Robin Hilton from All Songs Considered, which you could hear on NPR, which means we're legitimate. Catherine Jessup will be there as well. That show starts promptly at 8 p.m. I don't think I'm using the word promptly right. Anyways, it starts at 8 p.m. and it's over by 9, so please, please, please come on to that. We'll be at the Artisphere on Saturday for their one-year anniversary party. The music that we played after the Sean Gray interview was from the Spin Magazine 20th anniversary tribute to Nevermind. They had a bunch of artists cover that record, and I decided to play a song from that piece. What you heard was Charles Bradley and the Menaham Street Band, their version of Stay Away. This is a completely free album. I'll post the link on the description of the page, so don't worry about it. Here's why I'm playing it. I think it really sums up everything that Sean and I talked about. Nevermind is viewed in many, many, many different ways. There's no way to ignore the album, whether you like to or not. We all have our own connections to it and blah, blah, blah. Well, this one was interesting because it's a 62-year-old soul singer covering a song, but he wouldn't sing the line, "God is gay," which is a pretty important line in the song. So they just left that out, and that's kind of that's it. No matter what, you always had an atheist 24-year-old changing music, wearing dresses, confronting things like homophobia, being an out atheist, and that's nice. And now we have a 62-year-old guy kind of cashing in via a corporate magazine, refusing to sing God is Gay. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a wonderful night.